You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Thank you and good afternoon. I'm looking forward to this interview. It's going to be a revelation to me as to an expert talking about the mental stability of the president, which I talk about all the time, but I have no credentials to do so other than my politics. With me is Larry Bodine of Blog for Arizona. He has met this wonderful author whose book is Beating Depression and Bipolar Disorder Without Drugs, a memoir of a survival in a male-dominated world. And the author is Julian Sherman, a PhD. We'll talk with her in a moment. And Larry, thanks for bringing the doctor in.
Oh, it's my pleasure, John. I'm always happy to bring something new and important to you. And this is a book that talks about depression and bipolar disorder, which affect a combined 23 million people. And pretty much everybody knows or has somebody in their family that's got depression or bipolar disorder. And what caught my interest, I met Julie at the University of Arizona, where she was teaching, and she had some very interesting political insights.
Well, Dr. Sherman has a PhD in clinical psychology, certified by the American Board of Examiners in professional psychology. Let's get to that loaded question. I certainly think it's loaded. In your opinion, doctor, why do you think the Justice Department should consider invoking the 25th Amendment that President Trump is unfit for the office he holds? Do you think, doctor, that he is mentally ill?
I certainly do. And apparently they did too. The report is that the Justice Department considered invoking the 25th Amendment. And I didn't hear that right away, and it didn't come out right away. And in fact, I wondered why it hadn't. And of course it had. And the thing is that the reasons they thought about it are the reasons that anybody can see when they watch television.
Yeah, give me some of those observations that might lead one to believe this president's unfit mentally.
Well, he lies, but a lot of people lie. Very few people lie.
To the extent this person lies as much as he breathes.
You know? Exactly. He's a megalomaniac. He's not just narcissistic. He's a megalomaniac. He doesn't sleep. Now, that sounds like maybe it's good, but sleeping for only 3 hours a night, that's not normal. This is a characteristic of a manic. The manic can go without felt need for sleep or food and be just fine. Well, this impresses people. Well, and the way he talks, and he can't stay on the point. He has real trouble. He comes out with a word salad half the time. Trying to think of some more of his characteristics. Well, you know, the thing of it is that he's also delusional. Remember when he said that that he was being wiretapped?
Right. Yeah. By the Obama administration, right?
Yeah. I mean, there was no evidence for this. The guy is delusional. In fact, I wonder if when he was saying that Obama was born in Africa, remember how he stuck to that?
Sure, I do, of course.
And it was just like it was a delusion of his. Wow. You know, nothing would shake him. He kept repeating it and repeating it. And he's paranoid. He's paranoid. And this is really frightening. It is, it's very bad for our nation. And so I'm not at all surprised that the Justice Department considered, you know, invoking the 25th Amendment.
Let me interrupt you for just a moment, Doctor. And Larry, explain the 25th Amendment. It's pretty convoluted. It's not something we just do for the first half hour of a morning and you got it done. There's a lot to be done there.
Well, that's right. It's part of the U.S. Constitution, and it provides for a succession of one president to another. Now, to invoke the 25th Amendment, you are basically saying that declaring that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. And there's two ways that can take place. One is for the cabinet, you know, the vice president and all of his department heads to declare that he's unable to carry out his duties, or Congress can do it. But you need a two-thirds vote of both the House and Senate.
Almost impossible.
Well, it's very difficult, but...
And the cabinet, which the president has appointed, does that have to be unanimous?
Well, it's a majority vote.
Majority.
But, you know, they're all his toadies and sycophants and... You know, they can just disregard the fact that he's delusional, he's paranoid, he's got bipolar disorder. I don't know how anybody could miss the signs that Julie identified.
Well, we want to reintroduce Dr. Sherman, who has a PhD in clinical psychology, certified by the American Board of Examiners in professional psychology. There's another question that brings us to the politics of our show. You've stated in your book that there's a firm scientific bit of evidence that traumatic memories aren't like ordinary memories. They're recorded in detail in the human brain, and these memories are recorded more clearly in women than men. And the question would be, do you think Dr. Christine Blasey Ford could really correctly remember Brett Kavanaugh, the now Supreme Court Justice's face, even after all those years? The question, Doctor.
Absolutely, she could remember it, and I'm sure she did. It's too bad that kind of information didn't come out during the hearing, because I think it would have helped the public understand.
You stated in the forward book you had wanted to entitle your book, The Personnel is Political. And what do you mean by that, the personnel is political?
Well, this is something that women learned way back in the last phase of the women's movement. That was kind of a catchphrase. And what it means is that your personal experience, when you're suffering and you're having a hard time, you got to think about that also in political terms. This is not just personal, it's political. And today, when people in the United States are suffering, they're anxious, they're worried about where they're going to be able to pay their bills. Will they have health care? What is going to happen to them? Can they pay off their school debts? Can they get an education? These issues are personal, but they're also political. And the way to solve them is not by suffering personally by yourself, but by taking political action. The way to solve these problems is not by taking so-called antidepressant drugs or opioids. It's by taking political action.
Well, the publicity about your book states that the United States is the 19th happiest nation in the world. It's kind of shocking with the wealth and freedom we supposedly enjoy. Do you think there's a better political solution to promoting happiness rather than taking these antidepressants or opioids? And you think there is, indeed.
Yes. How about voting Democratic?
Well, that would probably be a positive move from Larry and my perspective. You know, it would be the first thing you would do, you know, if you don't mind.
Well, look at what some of the candidates are saying. They're talking about wealth inequality. Well, you know, when you don't have enough money to take care of your family, and you don't have food to eat, and you don't know where your health care is coming from, you've got enormous debts from college, you maybe can't even get a good job. I mean, these are issues that the Democratic candidates are talking about.
Have you long been political as well as a professional in psychology? Have they always been part of your life, being as political as you are?
I
would assume you're as progressive as you sound.
Well,
maybe more so.
Well, right. Well, my father was a political science professor.
Where was this?
At Akron University in Akron, Ohio.
Sure, of course.
And he brought me up to be politically conscious. And, you know, we need to get back to the politics of Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Dwight Eisenhower. These were people who had a decent approach to people, who put people first, and not like this money-mad greed and fraud that characterize our nation's operations today.
How has your message been received? You speak all over the country. You've had a great deal of experience talking about just what we've just talked about. What do people say to you about what you write and what you say?
Well,
some agree, some don't, I'm sure. But
there are those who, they talk about never Trump. Well, there's the Trump forevers.
There are. There
and is those people, they are not movable. It doesn't seem to me they're movable. And I think what we have to rely on is that there are a lot of people, including Republicans, who had Trump's number way back during the time when he was trying to get the nomination. And some of them spoke out very strongly. Of course, they retreated. But this is a time for every patriotic, red-blooded American to come to their senses and throw the bums out.
Let's talk a little bit about you're affiliated with the University of Arizona.
I'm a part of what they call OLLI, and it's a an organization that provides education for older adults, and it's connected to the university. I'm not a professor there.
But you work through that particular program at the
university.
And where have you been working as a professional previous to this job that you have now?
Well, I was working in Minneapolis and in Madison, Wisconsin, primarily.
Talk about, is this your first book? The second book, isn't it?
No, it's probably about the fourth.
I haven't been counting, but go ahead.
Yeah. I first wrote on the psychology of women. I wrote the first scientific book on the psychology of women back in 1971.
Wow.
And that's when I came to national attention and received honors for that. And then I did some of the first research on why women weren't doing well in mathematics. And that research won national recognition.
And Laurie Beaudoin, you've joined her efforts in publicizing this book. How did you get connected with this rather remarkable lady?
Well, I met her at the University of Arizona OLLI program, where she held basically a class on the points in her book, Beating Depression and Bipolar Disorder. What attracted me to it was that, there's just a lot of people that 23 million Americans have one or the other disease, and everyone I talk to says, oh, sure, it's affected someone in my family. It's affected a friend of mine. It's affected me. You know, in my own personal life, my cousin had bipolar disorder. And when she would call up in a manic state, she was just off the rails, just talk. And but the downside of it is there's also the depressive side of it, and she killed herself.
Oh, my God. So sorry. Yeah, that's so tragic. And that is the result many times of this terrible disease, is it not, Doctor?
Well, yes, it is. But I think suicide is not nearly a necessary outcome. A lot of people kill themselves just out of despair. We've got ex-coal miners killing themselves, and they don't have bipolar disorder. They have, political malaise, if you want to call it that.
Well, and terrible health problems, too.
Yeah, and general health problems,
underground,
right.
Sure.
Right. One of the things that really motivated me to write this book is the fraud about the antidepressant drugs. You see so many people taking them, and they think they work, and the evidence is simply not there they're effective.
The research on Prozac is, you have a placebo and Prozac, and those people can't tell the difference.
That's
other drugs as well.
That's right. And, and the other thing is there are terrible side effects. And once you start them, the doctor doesn't tell you how hard they are to get off. You can spend months trying to get off those, and you're miserable. And it takes months sometimes to get off them. And lithium, which is given for to treat bipolar disorder, they never did any studies past having people on it for 3 years to see what the side effects were. Well, in my particular case, they had me so loaded up with medications that didn't do any good that after a while I was near death.
Wow.
And I thought it was just me this happened to, but when I rebelled and stopped taking all medicines, and I became totally crazy, which is recounted in the book, what happened to me. Ended up in Mayo. Boy, that was a disappointment. That's supposed to be one of the best places in the country. But getting back to what worked for me, all that I needed was bright light therapy. What is characteristic of bipolar disorder is a light deprivation effect. And luckily for me, I never got addicted to drugs or alcohol, but that is also, these things are inherited. And that's also a correlated thing that's inherited with the depression and the mania. Now, the mania can be controlled by darkness. Just as the light activates people, darkness deactivates people. And what they found at NIMH is that by keeping people in the dark, they could pull them out of a rapid cycling, which is where they go from depression to mania, they go back and forth, or from out of mania with the darkness. And so if people can keep their biological clocks functioning properly by fooling the body that it's not winter time, so they don't go into a winter depression, and then having the darkness at night to keep them calmed down, they can manage this illness with very little medication. If people are manic, I'm not sure they can get along without being in the hospital at some point or taking something to calm them down. But in general, a lot can be done.
By the way, Larry Beaudin, bipolar is just almost an epidemic. The numbers are just staggering, aren't they?
Well, it's really surprising. You know, as I mentioned, it ran in my own family, and according to statistics, it affects 5.7 million Americans. It's the it's the sixth leading cause of disability in the world. Julia, what you know? Tell us more about what you know. Why it is that antidepressants don't work? Antipsychotics, lithium, and all these drugs. Is it just the pharmaceutical industry pushing them?
Oh man, I guess they pushed it. And you know, one of the horrible things about it is they corrupted the medical profession. They got doctors to run these studies that were bogus. They got medical journals to publish studies that weren't any good. They and there was a. It took an investigative journalist, Robert Whitaker, to reveal this to the public. You know, like, I'm a scientist. Well, you know, if you looked at the literature, you wouldn't know how bad the situation is. Now, that was back, I think it's more clear now than what it was at the time I started taking medicines and so on back in 1984.
By the way, we're talking with Julia Sherman, nationally known psychologist, 62 years of clinical teaching and research experience. Her new memoir, Beating Depression and Bipolar Disorder, Without Drugs, A Memoir of Survival in a Male-Dominated World. It's her sixth book, a beautifully written, scientifically sound, and easily understood by a thoughtful reader, says Florence Denmark, Ph.D., former president of the American Psychological Association. That's a nice endorsement for you.
Yes.
And her powerful story recounts her struggle with bipolar disorder and, of course, depression. She's been researching the causes of bipolar disorder with severe adverse drug reactions that caused her to stop psychiatric medication and forced her to rely on newfound knowledge in a diverse treatment without drugs. You know, it's amazing what you've been through, because it's not just you've written about it, you've lived it.
It's a miracle I've survived and here to tell the tale.
It really is. That's true. And very few people are that, you know, they can be very clinical about their writings and talk about all their research, but few have had the experience you've had of living each day with it and surviving.
Unfortunately, right. But I have survived, and that's the big thing. The triple cryotherapy that Larry referred to, maybe I should talk a little bit more about. One of the things that is really been proved to be really helpful to people, and as I say, I didn't have to have it myself, but is people who are, you know, they're depressed, so they take an antidepressant. That doesn't work. So the doctor says, well, we have this other new pill for you that's just come out. You know, this is going to be great. This will really work. So they try the second one. That doesn't work. So by now, you know, time is passing by, and they're totally miserable. It's gone on and on and on. And by this time, they want to kill themselves. And they're really set on it. And so the family's all in an uproar. What are we going to do? Well, you know, what the doctors usually say is you have to wash out a drug. You have to go without a drug for a while before we try a new one. So this is then going to be a whole period of time when somebody has to be in the hospital without any drug while the drug is being washed out. Well, they've discovered that they can pull somebody out of a deep depression just by keeping them awake.
Wow.
And they keep them awake, you know, for like 24 hours. Don't let them sleep. And the reason why this works is because people with bipolar disorder have an emergency response. In an emergency response, you don't sleep. And so if you keep somebody up, then this triggers that emergency response and pulls them out of their inactivity.
Hmm.
And then after that, after they've gotten that part done, then they set them on an early time schedule, because the idea is that during winter, the inheritance is the inheritance probably comes from Neanderthal. That's the evidence, that these are genes from Neanderthal, and Neanderthals had to, you know, go into a really kind of like a hibernation like state that we call depression during the winter in order to get through it. And so you need to fool the body that it's not winter. So they would, in triple chronotherapy, they keep them awake, then they start them on an early time where they get light early in the morning, and then they keep them on the bright light therapy until it's summer.
By the way, are you doing any book signings for this book anywhere? Are you getting any appearances I can plug for you?
Well,
if you come up with one, you'll let me know, right?
All right, I'll let you know.
All right. Beating Depression and Bipolar Disorder Without Drugs, A Memoir of Survival in a Male-Dominated World, Dr. Julian Sherman, Ph.D., my guest. And we got to the two political questions. Is Donald Trump fit to be president of the United States? Your answer to that was?
No.
I thought it was hell no. Maybe not. Okay. And then
I told Larry I wasn't going to swear.
Oh, okay. Well, he didn't hold me that. he knows better than trying that with me. And then, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, I just think it's important that we bring this around to the politics. And by the way, you know, the idea, too, of Dr. Christine Baisley Ford could correctly remember Brett Kavanaugh's face even after all those years. And that was another question you answered. And the answer to that was?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
From your expertise.
That poor woman, what she went through.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there have been many of us have really been through difficult times like that.
Well, I thank you both for being with us. I really, truly appreciate it. Let us know how the book's going. If you're going to have a book signing someplace, let us know about that. And Larry, thanks for bringing her in.
Oh, thank you very much.
Just one last thing. The book is available on Amazon, and we also have a Facebook group. You just search for Beating Depression and Bipolar on Facebook, and you'll find it. And we encourage people to read the book and comment, share their experiences.
I hope indeed they will. Thank you, Doctor. Thank you, Larry. Appreciate it.